Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast of the Locked On Podcast Network. I'm your host, Chris Carter, bringing you your daily dose of all things on the Pittsburgh Steelers. It's Tuesday, February 11th, and here we are talking more about what the Steelers could be doing next year. And this we're going to lead off with a top story before we get into today's Ultimate Division crossover for the day, which... If you missed yesterday's episode, it's the Ultimate Division Crossover Week, where everyone on the Locked On Podcast Network is talking with their divisional opponents and comparing and contrasting opinions from hosts of other Locked On sports shows. That will be the second and third segments of this show. However, today's episode is focused on the Pittsburgh Steelers, so we're gonna get takes from our guys from Locked On Ravens, Bengals, and Browns on the Steelers. But before we get into that, I do want to talk about the top story of the day, which is really from the weekend, but didn't get a chance to really go over it much in any of the shows. But a story from Brooke Pryor from ESPN. Brooke's a very good person. Glad to have her in Pittsburgh media. She came out with the story from Minkah Fitzpatrick, basically saying that Minkah Fitzpatrick, all pro safety for the Steelers, is now willing to be more versatile in his role in the Steelers defense. Now, the Steelers brought in Minkah Fitzpatrick with the trade, after week two of the season, after they found out that Ben Roethlisberger was done for the year, and they got Minkah Fitzpatrick as their free safety, and he was a ranging safety, was able to lead the team with 5 interceptions. It's the most, him and Hayden had that number. That was the most since Troy Polamalu had been on the team. And that was a huge step for him. But Minkah opened up about what he'd be willing to do moving forward and how he felt about his play this year. In a quote to Brooke, he said, "I'm comfortable on the field. The Steelers just allow me to play fast and do what I do. That's the thing I like about it here. We run what we run, and we run it well. We don't try to do too much, and we don't try to change it up week to week." He also went on to say, when you move around and you're a moving piece on the chessboard, it's harder to attack, and you can't just say as a quarterback, all right, this guy's gonna look at Minkah Fitzpatrick and say he's going to be in this spot every snap. That's what Minkah Fitzpatrick did last year. And he said, it's going to be harder and it's going to be more difficult to take me out of the game. That's the bottom line that Minkah Fitzpatrick wants to have on his advantage, is that, yeah, he lined up at free safety, and at the beginning of the season, people didn't know what to do with him because he was a new factor in the Steelers' defense, and he was making all sorts of plays. But then, all of a sudden, you saw teams weren't targeting him, and he was one of the least targeted players in the second half of the NFL season because teams realized if you give a chance for Minkah Fitzpatrick to make a play, he's going to make it. So now, with Minkah Fitzpatrick, if he lines up in more spots in the defense, that gives him a real good chance to make a play on the ball, to be able to clog up different things, and it forces quarterbacks into guessing games. One thing that's really important for the chess game that is football is to give very different looks. When you're doing that, you're forcing a quarterback to have to think, and when you force someone to have to think, that causes a chance for more mental process errors. That takes away their acting on instinct. That forces and that makes them have to slow down a little bit, which gives your pass rush more time to work. Anytime you force the offense to think, or force anybody to think, you give them more choices to have to make, which allows for a higher chance at them making mistakes that you can capitalize on. This is very good for the Steelers that he says this, especially considering Minkah Fitzpatrick. If you listen to anything he said when he was with the Miami Dolphins, he didn't like how they were using him in all the different roles. And part of that, I think, was that because they were doing so in a desperate fashion, because they had really him and Xavier Howard, and that was it. But when you look at how Minkah Fitzpatrick fit in the Steelers defense, the Steelers have a solidified pass rush. They can stop the run. They have 2 cornerbacks they can rely on, and they even have guys that can cover the middle of the field with their athleticism. So Minkah Fitzpatrick isn't alone anymore, and now he's saying, hey, I can do more things and force guys to think in different ways. It's a very good sign for what Keith Butler could do, considering that in his time with the Steelers, he's this was the first year in 2019 that you could say he had a complete secondary that he could a really coverage team that he could plan around and say, hey, let's have these moving pieces, let's depend on these guys to succeed in coverage. Now you're talking about with your biggest X factor in the secondary being able to move around, that creates a lot more chaos you can plan for and possibly confuse opposing offenses with. Those are the kind of stuff that Keith Butler really does well when it comes to bringing the pressure. The Steelers have led the NFL in sacks for the past 3 years because, I'd say in 2017 they did it because they were finding all these different ways to blitz because they didn't have the prime edge rushers. 2018 you saw them really come up with how they rushed the quarterback, but you still saw a lot of creativity. But now in 2019 you kind of saw what would it be like when they have the dynamic edge rushing duo with Dupree and Watt. And if you bring Dupree back, you're giving yourself a really good chance that you can really just rush with four guys and get pressure because you have Watt, Dupree, Tuitt, and Hayward. Now you got seven guys in the secondary, or one or two of those guys might be linebackers, but you got guys that you're flowing around, and if Minkah Fitzpatrick is the guy that everyone's scared of and you can move them all over the place, you can make him the boogeyman in everyone's nightmares. So this is a very good note for the Steelers moving forward. I think it's a positive sign for what they're trying to do. We'll keep notes on that, and I'm going to do some X's and O's stuff on that later in the offseason when we start talking about it. It also depends on who they pick up in free agency and what all moves come. But that's the top story of the day from Brooke Pryor of ESPN. You can go read her work there. But right before we get into the Ultimate Division crossover, we got a break that we got to get into. But be sure to listen. We got some interesting takes coming in here from me and the guys of the AFC North. All right, everyone, welcome back to the AFC North Ultimate Division crossover. I'm Chris Carter, host of Locked On Steelers. I'm here with Kevin, Jeff, and Jake. It's day two, which means we're going to team two, and that is the Pittsburgh Steelers. Fellas, it's great to have you guys back for another day. And now we get to talk about the team I have to talk about 24/7. And I figure I want to start our talks around and getting just the division standings on how people feel about what was the most defining moment of the Steelers season, which wasn't a play. It wasn't something that happened that stopped them from making the playoffs. It was, well, I guess it did stop and make the playoffs, but it was in one day when the Steelers knew they lost Ben Roethlisberger for the entire season, and on the same day trading for Minkah Fitzpatrick. After seeing it play out for a full season, the Steelers just missing the playoffs, but Minkah Fitzpatrick being a first-time All-Pro guy, and Ben, you know, how old is he? Is he coming back? What has been you guys' reactions? We're going to start with Kevin from Locked On Ravens, but what has been your reaction to how you've read how the Steelers dealt with that situation?
Well, I'll give you my immediate reaction first, Chris. And I personally wasn't a huge fan of the move at first, but looking at it throughout the entire season and now talking to everybody here today, it was an obvious win, and the Steelers really had to make a decision. Ben Roethlisberger was done for the season. They had to say, do we trust Mason Rudolph at the time, Mason Rudolph, to go and lead this team to the playoffs, and what do we need in order to make that happen? The Steelers needed secondary help. Minkah Fitzpatrick was available, a guy who the Ravens were actually looking at, and there were rumors that the Ravens could maybe give a first-round pick and a second or two firsts for him. There were a lot of Ravens fans clamoring for Fitzpatrick, and there was no denying Fitzpatrick's talent, but he just came into Pittsburgh, a turnover machine, a ball magnet. He's under team control for a long time. It's pretty much saying, all right, we're going to give up a year or two of control here to get a player who isn't going to break the bank until a few seasons down the line, still gave Pittsburgh a chance to win and really turn the season around for Pittsburgh. Now, we could say if Mason Rudolph played a bit better, if Devlin Hodges came in, played a bit better, this team, we could be talking about potentially even probably not the AFC North champions because 14-2 was a hard record to beat, but we could potentially be talking about the fifth seed here in the AFC and looking ahead to next season. And we'll get into that in the next segment, but talking about what Fitzpatrick brings to this team, saying publicly that he wants to move around the defense. Such a team-first guy, and a guy who, when you look at the Steelers' pass rush, something we talked about yesterday, if the pass rush such as T.J. Watt, Hargrave, Tuitt, and Hayward, all those guys, once they got to the quarterback had to make a decision. Either take the sack or throw the ball into a secondary that now stouted and now had Minkah Fitzpatrick along guys with Joe Hayden, Steven Nelson, and the like. So when Roethlisberger went down, Steelers had to make a decision, and I think they ultimately did make the right one there.
Yeah, it's funny because there's a divide. When it happened, there was a 50-50 divide among Steeler Nation. You had certain writers saying this was great. I was on the pro side. I thought it was a great move because I was like, they're not going anywhere this year, and the idea that they might get their I thought they were always going to end up right in the middle of the draft, you know, 18, 19. They never finish in the top 10. So I was like, this is like getting a top 10 pick by getting Minkah Fitzpatrick. And, you know, and I know he was part of why they finished 8-8, but that was why I liked it. Jeff, your take from Locked On Browns on how that impacted their season and you seeing the Steelers. The Browns beat the Steelers for the first time in several years. And, you know, but they also saw Minkah Fitzpatrick and how the team sort of shifted throughout the season.
For me, the move, at the time, I guess there's no way you can question the move. I mean, you brought in an absolute stud in the secondary. But for me, it's more of, you know, you look at it now where it's at. Look, I mean, the whole point of bringing in Minkah was let's beef up the defense and see if we can make this a playoff team. Obviously, they fell a little short. And what we got to see this year is there is no life after Ben Roethlisberger on the roster. I believe everybody in the room, even you, Chris, agrees with that. There is no life after Ben on this roster. And for me, it just seems, you know, you look at Phillip Rivers now is going to move on. Eli Manning has retired. And it seems like, and I'm not saying you, Chris, necessarily, but it seems like a lot of Steelers fans are just like, well, Ben will be back at 38 years old after an elbow killed his entire season, I guess week two, week three, whatever it was. He'll be back and we'll be fine. It seems really weird to just say that about a 38-year-old quarterback. Look, you know, Ben looks like the high school hero who's now been the 13-year offensive line coach at his alma mater. And, you know, he's already got two ex-wives. You know, he's no more athletic anymore. We get all of that. But my question is, you know, it seems weird and no first-round pick. And we realize that Duck ain't it. We realize that Rudolph ain't it. And so they're going to go into this year, and look, it could go really well, but if it doesn't, you know, then are they going to fall back a year or two? Because without a first-round pick, they're not sniffing any of the top quarterbacks this year. So I think they have a lot invested in what they think Ben can be this year, and it just seems really weird that we're like, you know, I mean, you look at baseball, you look at anything where there's arm injuries, and all of a sudden, you know, what if Ben ain't got the fastball anymore? What if he ain't got, you know, the precision? What if he ain't be able to drop balls in space? And either way, the Minkah move is fine because you got a stud. And for him to say, I want to move around more, which is funny because that was the same thing he said to get out of Miami.
In Miami, yeah.
Yes. Well, I know I want to be this. Well, no, this is what it is. This is the year and the era you play in. You are a great defensive back, so we're going to put more on your plate because this is what we want from you. So it's weird that he's saying this now because it was the same things he used to get out of Miami. But either way, you got yourself a bowler. You know, obviously, Minkah grew up 15 minutes from me here in Jersey. He's a fantastic player. I don't have an issue with the player, the move. But my question is, you know, this is all based on, you know, Ben coming back and being normal Ben. And if Ben was 28, I'd say, all right. Saddle up, let's roll. But at 38, it seems really, really disingenuous to just assume he's going to come back and be who he was.
So, Jeff, that's a very good question, and I think that that's where a lot of Steelers fans are at. A lot of people think he's going to get back to being, you know, 2014 through 2019 or 2018 Ben, where he's slinging the ball all the time. But I honestly think the Steelers don't plan on and are relying on him to do that. I think that they'll rely on him to be a play caller, to know the offense, but to also know when to switch out of having to throw the ball too much and go to a running game. Now, they have to develop a stronger running game for next year, and that's what I think
their top pick will either be a really strong offensive lineman that falls to them or one of the top running backs that fall to them, because I don't see a lot of teams picking among this running back crop too early in this draft. So I think it's going to be more so about they're not going to expect Ben to lead a top 10 offense anymore. They're going to say, hey, if you can be what you were in your first, 4 or 5 years with the team, which is the last time that they won the Super Bowl with him, and not necessarily in how you play, but in how often you throw and how much production we get out of you, that I think that would be more conducive to the way that they're building their roster. But there's a lot of time before the draft and free agency, and who knows what's going to happen with the Steelers moving forward. But wanted to get to Jake on the same topic. I know we've talked about this a few times on air and off air. Where do you stand now that the season's done and over with?
So I'm gonna come at this, right? I'm gonna punch holes in this because the Steelers are not my boys, and I've been traumatized since 2005 thanks to Kimo von Olhoffen. So here's where we're gonna start. We're gonna start with looking at Minkah Fitzpatrick in a vacuum. Started out with the Steelers a little shaky, right? Doesn't really get it going. Has three amazing games, has some interceptions in the first six games or so with the Steelers, and then his last few games with the Steelers, still good, but not great, I would argue. He didn't have an interception after, week 10? So he goes, that's okay. He's not getting his hands on the ball. He's a free safety, right? So I'm just looking at his play, right? And you're right. He's not targeted a lot, but he's not getting his hands on the ball either. So I don't know how you avoid a free safety. I haven't watched the tape on all these games, but I'm just looking at his ball production, and so that falls off a little bit. But beyond Minkah Fitzpatrick, and he could be a very good player for the Steelers, that's neither here nor there. The Steelers gave up what amounts to the first team out of the playoffs in the AFC draft position to get him in a year where they don't have a quarterback. Then they go on, as you point out, after a really bad start to finish 8-8. But the strength of victory for the Steelers is 3-24. The Steelers go 8-8, but they beat the following teams. The Cincinnati Bengals twice, which, given the Bengals are bad this year, the Los Angeles Chargers, who were bad this year, the Miami Dolphins, who were bad this year, the Los Angeles Rams is probably their best win. They missed the playoffs. Indianapolis Colts, Jacoby Brissett, never going to be impressed with that kind of win. They beat the Cleveland Browns. They beat the Cardinals with their rookie quarterback, and that's it. Those are the teams that Pittsburgh beat this year. So you have a close loss to Seattle. You have a close loss to San Francisco early in the year, before they figured themselves out, right? You have a blowout loss in week one to New England. And then down at the end of the year, you have a loss to Buffalo, who, good team, right? Playoff team. You lose to New York, who's terrible. And then you lose to Baltimore. Did Baltimore play as starters in week 17? I wasn't watching.
No, they did not.
So the end of the year doesn't go great. So I'm just sitting here wondering, are the Steelers just fool's gold, right? Is this 8-8 record a lot better looking than perhaps the quality of the team?
So, I mean, I do think that there's merit to that. It's always funny, people, when you want to say, oh, I like this team, but oftentimes when you look at teams' record, you could do that for a lot of teams that win, unless you have a team like the Steelers in 2008, they had the hardest strength of schedule when they won the Super Bowl then. But a lot of times you could poke holes and say, like the Browns last year, everyone's like, okay, well, wait a minute, slow down. A lot of their wins were against teams that had losing records and didn't make the playoffs. And then, you saw how it played out this year. My biggest thing with the my biggest thing with the Steelers in 2 years results, I do think people do need to keep their pants on when it comes to expectations. But I also think that when you look at a lot of those games, people underestimate how bad Devlin Hodges was and how limiting he was to their offense. And the fact that, don't forget, they had the close loss to Seattle in Mason Rudolph's first ever appearance in the NFL. But then his first ever start was against the Niners, the NFC champions. And they were they were a James Conner fumble away from winning with Mason Rudolph's first start ever against those San Francisco 49ers. I think that the Steelers, they do need to make several steps. But I'm not on the train that I don't think that they're completely out of it. When it comes to next year, they're just going to be some bums and get washed away. I think that they'll be hovering around the 8-8 to 11-5 point this time. When they're going to next year, if they get a healthy Ben back and they get a running game, I think that changes a few things. But
they don't. I think that if they're relying on Mason Rudolph next year, yeah, they're toast. But that's my take. We're going to be back giving a few more of these takes right after these commercials. Welcome back to the AFC North Ultimate Division crossover. This episode focusing on the Steelers and how the opponents across the division are taking on how that season just progressed. Now, going back to Kevin, Locked On Ravens. The ultimate matchup that we know is going to get played up by the NFL, when they announce the schedule, I guarantee you that at least one of the Ravens game, and they always are, but at least one of those games will be a primetime event or a 4 o'clocker that CBS just like blows up with Jim Nantz and Tony Romo or whoever partners with Jim Nantz this year. And I guarantee you all week, you're going to see the promo of Lamar Jackson versus TJ Watt and Minka Fitzpatrick. And that's going to be the hype of the game. Now, granted, the Ravens swept the Steelers this year, but they were an overtime fumble away from maybe tying or losing to Devlin Hodges with Lamar Jackson having 3 turnovers in that game. Kevin, what is your outlook on, and we talked about Lamar Jackson and the hype that I think is real around him. What is your take on what the Ravens have to do to keep building around him to get ready to play the Steelers defense and how it progressed last year?
Well, I mean, when you talk about that Steelers defense, and we talked about this a bit yesterday, Chris, it's that pass rush. TJ Watt, Cam Hayward, and those guys give a lot of teams problems. And we'll throw out the Week 17 game because the Ravens didn't play their starters. The Pittsburgh Steelers were decimated with injuries. So looking back to Week 4, you're right. An overtime fumble away from the Pittsburgh Steelers, pretty much stealing that one from the Ravens. And it's easy to think about, well, what if that did happen? If Juju Smith didn't fumble that football, Devlin Hodges came in after Mason Rudolph was literally knocked out of the game in more ways than one. And literally almost propelled the Steelers to victory, finished 7 of 9 for 68 yards. Not the gaudy stat line that everybody would expect when talking about that, but I think that Hodges played really well in that game. When you look to play the Pittsburgh Steelers, especially from a standpoint of Lamar Jackson, they forced him into some bad throws. Lamar Jackson did not throw a lot of interceptions last season, but the one that I think was his worst came against Pittsburgh when it was towards the end of the half. He threw, and Steven Nelson, I believe, picked it off. It's just a terrible throw by Lamar Jackson, and I don't say that often, especially not from this past season. But part of that, and most of that, had to do with the Pittsburgh Steelers' pass rush. Ronnie Stanley was one of the best pass protectors throughout the entire NFL, earned the best pass blocking grade from Pro Football Focus. He and the rest of that Ravens offensive line, they were still trying to bond, still trying to gel. And the Ravens were on a bit of a down streak, losing to both the Kansas City Chiefs and Jeff's Cleveland Browns. So it's safe to say, well, what if Juju Smith-Schuster didn't fumble that ball? Would the Ravens have finished 14-2? Would they have had that momentum? Next season, looking ahead for the Ravens, they have the cap space and the draft capital, assuming they don't do any more extensions. The Ravens signed Chuck Clark to an extension yesterday. But looking at the Ravens looking to play the Steelers, they have to get that pass rush in check. Because Lamar Jackson, we all know he can scramble. We all know he can make something out of nothing, make magic appear out of thin air. And the Ravens need to get weapons in order to help him do that. And when you look at the Steelers, they are playing with a bit of fire here with James Conner. I think looking ahead to the offseason, are they tired of James Conner getting injured? Are they going to look to the draft to draft a running back in the first 2 rounds? If they get a healthy Ben Roethlisberger and if they get a sound rushing attack, the Ravens struggled with their run defense, but I'm still confident that if that happens for the Ravens, they will address their weakness in the defense, which is their run game. But overall, Chris, I'm just looking for 2 very solid, very entertaining, and very high-powered football games between these 2 teams.
Absolutely. I look at this as a potential, you know, blockbuster when it comes to ratings, because everyone, whether you like or you don't like Lamar Jackson, he is a talking point for the NFL, and he will be for the next few years at least, depending on how he plays. I mean, I remember after the Pro Bowl skills competition, when there was like that Clay Travis guy who came out and said, "Oh, look at Lamar Jackson," and I'm like, mm-hmm. "Stop the fool." Either way, Lamar Jackson's a talking point. Steelers Ravens has always been a draw, and I'm with you. I very much look forward to those games because that's going to generate so much talk, and it's going to add to what's been a great rivalry, and I'd say the best rivalry in the division over the past two decades since the Ravens have been formed. But moving forward to the team that stole their team from from Cleveland, we're gonna move to Browns. Jeff, I wanted to ask you, because I'm sure Cleveland, maybe they haven't moved on all the way, but I'm sure they're ready to put everything behind them about Myles Garrett and how this season it looked promising. Like the night, like we were talking about off air, with 8 minutes to go in that game, everyone in Cleveland is like, man, we're beating the Steelers handily in our own stadium. The season's looking up and everything's going right. And then everything goes haywire. What has been your read both on the team and the fans of Cleveland and how they look at the Steelers and how that they, you know, and just the rivalry that's always been with them, even when the Steelers are dominating, there's still always just that hatred between the teams, that things do pop off between them. Wanted to get your feel on where both the organization and the fans are on that right now.
Oh, I'm sure Jake would agree with me. It's nice that you and Kevin are having the little love fest here, like you guys are the two best, you know, rivals within division. And I think we all agree everybody hates Pittsburgh. I think that's probably the two games you circle. Here. Right, Jake, Kevin, you're probably with me here. It's win the Pittsburgh games. And it's not 8 minutes. It was 8 seconds. That Thursday night primetime game, it was, you know, and go with the old Charles Dickens line, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times. I'm sitting here getting ready to do a post-game show. Yeah, took down Pittsburgh. All right, absolutely beautiful. Everything about it, oh, my God, what just happened? And the thing about the entire situation with Myles Garrett was, it was, for the NFL knows the guy, the man that Myles Garrett is. It was like, he's not Vontaze Perfect, and Jake, I'm not trying to pick on you by any means, you know that. But it was just like, oh my God, we just got a really, really bad situation on field, on primetime, from a guy that is nothing like this. Myles Garrett's in an Apple store, and there's some kid trying to buy a new iPhone, and he's short on money, and Myles Garrett's like, yeah, I'll pick up the tab. And like, this is just the dude he is. Like, the NFL, like, they love to punish people. But every now and then they get in the situation where somebody's got to be punished who does not fit the criteria. And it's like, well, we really got to punish him hard. I'm not stunned whatsoever that he was told, this is it, your year's over. We said it on that post-game show that night. But for me, honestly, the worst one was Demaryius Randall getting suspended for the follow game in Pittsburgh. How did Pittsburgh win? Duck Hodges hit a couple of long balls. Like, look, you lose your star for whatever reason, whether it's injury, whether it was the – and I will say it was a freak incident, because Myles Garrett is like – he's like the biggest, strongest, fastest, badass nerd that ever walked the planet. But somebody pushed him to his point, and he lost it. You look at players like Demaryius Randall, who got suspended for that game due to the fact – you know, the game at Pittsburgh. And so Duck Hodges hits a couple of long balls. And all of a sudden, the season was over, and it was, you know, like other people, well, this, and fans, well, Myles Garrett. Well, no, this game was close. This game was within range. How about talk about the guy who got suspended because he was too lazy to show for freaking practice? Or he literally said the words on a 31-degree day, it's a little too cold to practice outside. Seriously? You were playing the game in Pittsburgh. It was going to be outside. It just gets so weird to cover, like we all do it, and you cover these teams as deep as we do, in some of the idiotic minutia that comes up. And when we're talking about this said safety, who, you know, a year ago was like, wow, you know, maybe he's looking at a 4-year, $40 million deal, 25 guaranteed. You heard anybody even mention this guy's name to this point? Everybody, right. Oh, these are free agent targets. These are free agent targets. Demaryius Randall. I mean, his name has gone literally like stone cold.
But just to build off where you're going with this, Jeff, the other thing about this is even after Baker Mayfield went on Thursday Night Football's like the post-game show and said this is unacceptable and the Browns, you know, tried to put this to bed, then Kitchens, you know, there was the Pittsburgh Started It shirts, and then Kitchens was seen wearing the Pittsburgh Started It shirt. And then, I mean, I'm telling you, I was at Heinz Field and I just watching these Steelers come in with their own shirts, and I'm like, oh boy, this is going to be a thing. And then it became a thing. And then just what I wanted to get the sense of where
where everyone is at, like, post. Because now, not only you have that game, you have the game where the Steelers beat the Ravens, or not beat the Browns. I sometimes conflate stuff. But I look at that and I'm just like, man, like, how does Cleveland feel after all of this craziness happened in what looked like their year to finally come out from being in the basement? I mean, they weren't fourth place. That was the Bengals that we'll get to you in a sec, Jake. But they weren't the team that was they weren't the ultimate doormat of the division. They were competitive this year.
I think if you look at the way this went down, and look, this comes from the GM, and the GM is responsible. I mean, you had all those assets from the previous regime as far as, you know, draft assets. And, you know, a lot of people want to poo-poo it. Oh, well, this turned out this way, and, you know, he did this and that. He didn't deliver. I mean, we literally put together better drafts in 2018 and 2019 than this GM did. And his problem was, is, look, you know, he wanted Freddie to be head coach of this team. And then when it got to about mid-October, we're not sure he can handle it. He doubled down. I want this guy. Freddie's going to be all right. We're going to get this done. And then when it came to the end of the season, when nothing got done, John Dorsey told the owners of the team, keep Freddie. We'll get this right. So literally he tripled down. So that's how they're both gone. Basically what it was is, you know, you had – and look, you even with the misses he made, you still had Myles Garrett, Olivier Vernon, Joe Schobert, Denzel Ward, Greedy Williams. You had seven safeties. You had a pretty good – an offensive line that showed well at the end of 18. You had Odell Beckham. You had Jarvis Landry. You had Nick Chubb. You had Baker Mayfield. You know, sometimes you got to put your big boy pants on. They didn't get it done. Whatever happens with this current regime, the thing is, it's going to be aligned and it's going to be unified. Whether it works or not, it's the first time Cleveland has done this. And I don't care if it's playing blindfold, throwing darts at yes or no on every decision you make. At least that's a plan. This is the first time this has happened where there is unified choices and decisions to be made under a Haslam regime here in Cleveland. I don't care what their method is of getting it done. At least everybody's on the same page.
I hear that. With that, we'll move on to the Bengals. Jake, of course, everyone's talking about how Joe Burrow is just the automatic first-round pick. The Bengals aren't even on the clock. We know that's what they're doing. What is your prospect of how he can do in his rookie year, considering the Bengals, I forget the name of the tackle that they lost, but he was their first round pick last year and he didn't even get to play that much at all. And what is your take on what they need to do to build around Joe Burrow to get ready to play teams in the AFC North, but especially the Steelers?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot that they can do to improve the team. You look at their draft needs this year, it's quarterback in the first round. And then after that, you can say, well, they probably shouldn't take a running back. Joe Mixon's pretty good. They probably shouldn't take maybe an edge player because they feel good about Carl Lawson and Sam Hubbard. But then you look at the rest of the roster, you're like, yeah, you can make an argument for any other position on this team that they could make improvements here. And this is coming off a year where the defense wasn't on the same page for the first half of the year. They did get a lot better in their defense in the second half of the year, but how much of that is fool's gold too? The same way that I questioned it with the Steelers and their strength of victory, the Bengals were playing a much softer schedule in the second half, so that's something that they will have to figure out. But as far as building around Joe Burrow, they do get back, as you mentioned, Jonah Williams, the first round tackle from Alabama, who consensus, I believe, top tackle in the draft in 2019, unless you have concerns about his 33.5-inch arms, he should be fine as an NFL tackle. But they still do need to make some improvements on the offensive line, especially when it comes to that matchup against the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm going to echo a little bit of what Kevin said here in that the pass rush is the most concerning part for me in that matchup. And I said that I wasn't ever going to say anything nice about the Steelers, but I will say that Stephon Tuitt, that defensive line is a solid unit. TJ Watt, I have to admit that I was wrong about TJ Watt. He got better. He had a first couple years where there was a lot of sack production, but then he backed that up and rounded out his game and was consistently getting pressure on the quarterback and is starting to look a lot like his brother in terms of the amount of disruption that he can offer for defense. So for the Bengals, they need to solidify that offensive line. I am very concerned that they feel better about that offensive line than they should, because of some strides they took down the stretch, again, when they were playing teams without much of a pass rush. But if it's Bobby Hart, again, at right tackle, and a bunch of guys who can't figure out who wants to actually take that left guard job, then I'm worried about Joe Burrow getting it done. But then you turn on the tape of Joe Burrow, right? You look at 10 Nguyen's timeline today. He's a writer for The Athletic. He says, I could put together a 10-minute highlight reel of Joe Burrow just escaping the pocket. And that's it. 10 minutes of it. And I'm like, yeah, do it, please. And I want to see it. Get me pumped up, right? But that's going to be a hard environment for Burrow to thrive in. And they're going to have to build the offensive line properly. They're going to have to bring back A.J. Green. They're going to have to adopt some principles of that LSU offense, namely getting more run-pass option in the offense, getting more deep shots worked into the offense, which means they need a deep threat. That's the thing, right? They need to find the guy that's going to be healthy and stretch the field, and hopefully that's John Ross. Hopefully that's A.J. Green, but just a lot of questions, right? More questions than answers, and we'll have to see how they spend their money and spend their draft capital, and I assume we'll talk about that tomorrow when Joe and I get to run the show.
All right, so my last question for you guys. This is sort of a question where it's like playing chess against yourself. You want to make sure you want to challenge yourself on both sides of the board. But I wanted to ask you guys, going down the row, starting with Kevin from Locked On Ravens, what is the, if you were to be the Steelers GM and you weren't trying to sabotage them because you're covering another team, but if you were the Steelers GM, what would be your outlook on this offseason? What they should prioritize? You know, a big talking point here is, should they keep Bud Dupree? And what should they prioritize in the NFL draft and maybe moving in free agency? They don't have a lot of cap space right now. I mean, they practically have none. But, you know, the team is – it's kind of obvious they're going to get rid of a few big name guys or big number guys like Anthony Ticklow, Mark Barron, Ramon Foster, just for starters, that would get them in the range to be able to make some moves this offseason. Kevin, if you're the Steelers GM and you're actually playing for the Steelers, just your insight on how the Steelers play from an opponent's perspective, where would you go if you're the team?
I think for the Steelers, it's just about being smart with their money. Is this the year where they should spend it, or is this the year where they should kind of let some of it roll over to next year? I think they just need to be smart with their money. You talk about last offseason, Dante Moncrief and Mark Barron, not the best free agent signings in the world. I think they need to prioritize a running back in terms of making sure that they have a viable backup option for James Conner if he goes down, someone who could maybe even take over the reins. But overall, just be smart with the money and understand that this might not be the huge offseason to spend big. Maybe you get Ben Roethlisberger's cap hit off the books next offseason and you have more money to spend there.
All right, Jeff from Locked On Browns.
Well, I hope they don't steal my draft board like they did last year, where they drafted Benny Snell, where they drafted Justin Lane, and many others. And I kind of agree with Kevin. I kind of agree with Jake a little bit. Was that 8-8 legit? And you bring Ben back now. Obviously, you know, you have the, you know, obviously whether or not you're going to extend Juju and Bud Dupree. I mean, are you going to go really heavy on defense and say, you know, we'll play small ball? Which makes some sense, but the other thing is you have no life after Ben. You know, is he going to play 2 more years at his age? Who knows? Is he going to be healthy enough to play this year? There's some questions for Pittsburgh, but so for me, I would probably just beef up the defense and say, look, we'll be good on one side of the ball, and we'll see how our chips are going to fall.
All right, Jake from Locked On Bengals.
I think that they should go after an outside receiver, and I don't think they have the money to do it, but I feel like they were really hamstrung, given quarterback play, but I feel like they're missing that dynamic playmaker that left with Antonio Brown and all of his antics. Not that Antonio Brown is the solution anymore, right? Like, he's gone. But Juju Smith-Schuster showed, and he has a chance to take a leap, right? But I think that he showed that he benefited a lot from the presence of Antonio Brown, given he's young, he could take a step. But I'm looking at an outside option. Maybe it's Emmanuel Sanders, right? There's a free agent for you. I don't think they're in position to go after a guy like Amari Cooper.
He burned his bridges in Pittsburgh.
Right, so you have to find a guy like that, right? And looking at the list of free agents, I don't know. Maybe he's not out there. Maybe they need to make a trade. Maybe they need to chase Stephon Diggs or something like that, because they're not going to go after A.J. Green, right? Like, that's never going to happen. And then the next guy is Robbie Anderson.
Yeah.
I guess Breshad Perriman, he came on this year. And so maybe that's not where they go. Maybe it's just more of the same. Build that defense. Try to win with the defense. Find a replacement for Mark Barron. Make sure that you feel good about your corners. Make sure you're healthy and replace Bud Dupree's production. Who was the guy that got hurt on the defensive line? Was it Tuitt?
Tuitt got, yeah, he was out for, he missed like basically three quarters of the season.
So you got to make sure he's healthy for the year, right? Because when he goes down, that's a big player. And then Javon Hargrave. So they have some, I think their big decisions are their own guys. And namely, as we talked about, Bud Dupree and Javon Hargrave, because those are both very good. I don't want to necessarily say players because I'm not sold on Bud Dupree yet, but at least they got a lot of production. And Stephon Tuitt is a very good player, has a great track record there. And then outside of that, I would look for an outside receiver somewhere, and I just don't know where you find it. Maybe in the draft because the draft is deep there.
Yeah, this is the year to draft a wide receiver, even in the middle rounds. But yeah, great points by everybody. Thanks for doing the crossover. This has been another episode of the AFC North Ultimate Division Crossover. Tomorrow we'll be back. We'll be doing the Bengals-focused episode of the AFC North Ultimate Division Crossover. We'll all be back as a group. Be sure to tune in.